Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode number 30. Thank you, as always, for downloading and subscribing to the Sight and Sound podcast. We love to get your feedback, so get in touch with us by sending an email to podcast@sightandsound.co.uk. And on this episode, going to a conference has changed in the new normal. What is a new video platform called Remo doing about it? And Martin Lawler, friend of the podcast, will be here to tell us about the technology he uses and what he likes about it. That's all coming up on this episode. Now, the ways in which we attend conferences have changed so much in the last year, haven't they? I've gone to a number of virtual events. Gone are the chocolate muffins, Danish pastries, and free conference bags. But instead, you can sit in your home office and attend as many of these as you want on all sorts of platforms. And indeed, I think post-COVID and vaccines, the way in which we attend conferences is probably going to change forever. Well, a video conferencing platform called Remo has been a very popular in this space lately, and we're going to talk to some people who've been heavily involved with Remo. We have Graham Coath and Pete Quinn joining us on the podcast today. Guys, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting
us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to have you guys. Graham, let's start with you, because you're sort of like the Mr. Remo guy in the UK. Tell us a little bit about Remo first.
Okay. That's a nice title, isn't it, Mr. Remo?
There you go.
There are other ones as well, so I have to be careful there. But yeah, Remo is a virtual events platform. It's a very different experience from anything like Zoom or Teams that most people are used to in terms of going online, in as much as it tries to get more intimate again. So what you're provided with when you come into that space is, if you just imagine a room, a bit like a conference hall, set out with tables. So very much as you would expect if you went to a conference in the real world. And at that table, there's small tables where you can have intimate conversations with people. But you can still have people speaking at the conference where then the conversations around the table stops and you listen to someone speaking. But it's being able to then take it back to those small groups again so that you get that intimate feeling and that intimate conversation as that happens. And it's also about allowing the user a little bit more control, because in some of the other platforms that people are used to, you have to wait for the host to put you somewhere. Whereas in this, you can actually decide, oh, had enough of listening to that at that table. I'm now going to move to this table. So that control element, shifting it around and giving it back to the user, is a key part of it, of that experience, which again is very much like when you go to a conference or you go to more of an exhibition, say, where you go in and you'll stand at a stand and you'll take that experience in. But if it's not for you, you can then move and find the next thing that's of interest.
You know, that's really interesting, because I was at a conference the week before last on Zoom, and I was going to a breakout room, but I was put into the wrong room. And the subject matter in the room I was in didn't really hold a lot of interest for me. And I was trying to explain to the moderator, who was very nice. I felt very sorry for her, but she couldn't move me to the room I wanted to go.
I had exactly that problem the other day, Stuart. I was doing a breakout. I was the host. I was on Zoom, which I think of the kind of broad packages is probably the most accessible, and people I talk to kind of agree with that on that front. But I had exactly the same issue where someone had been misallocated and it was by me by accident, but we couldn't get her out. I didn't have the power. The thing is, I learned after she could leave the room, come back to the main bit, and I could reallocate. But you know, when you've got five breakout groups and you're working across that, that's not clear. And that's why I like Remo and why I've actively chosen Remo for an event we recently hosted, because it gives the delegate the autonomy to move around. And we label the tables with kind of subjects of interest, so people can kind of flock to those tables and come together and discuss their common interests or reflect on the presentation or the discussion that's been held.
So let me ask you then, if I can, Pete, about the event, because I think you started off by going to a conference that was hosted on the Remo platform, and then you were so impressed that you decided to use it for something you were running.
Yeah, so I went and was invited to speak and attend a conference about EdTech, basically, and it was really interesting. It was people from all over the world, and what I got back was what Graham had just described, as that opportunity to sit at a table with people, wax lyrical, you know, and then remember that I would do, you know, wanted to catch up with someone on another table, double click on the seat, there I am, you know, not butting in but joining the conversation, and we had a side room in that event, I think two side rooms, where you could go and learn from sponsors or suppliers about their product. So when it came to a kind of small event that the International Network of Inclusive Practice, of which I'm a co-founder, we had the opportunity, I suppose, to choose Zoom. We had the opportunity to choose Teams or one of the other packages that's out there. But I was really taken by Remo for that interactive networking bit, because that's been one of the strengths of our events before. People have loved to come for the content, but also for that interaction, because we have lots of people from lots of different backgrounds who enjoy that opportunity to kind of chat, throw ideas around, chew the fat, that kind of thing.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you guys on this podcast was because Remo came onto my radar a couple of weeks ago when we did a little bit of user testing with it and looking at how usable it was with screen readers. Where are we, Graham, in relation to accessibility of the Remo platform, and what's happening in that space?
All I know is what I'm told, because obviously I'm not involved in the development of the platform itself, but obviously we feed back as users. I know that they are looking at captioning for speakers, which is on the development roster. Other than that, you know, everything that we feed back hopefully goes into the journey plan for the platform, and at some point it will get developed. But it's like all platforms, really. Unfortunately, people develop, in terms of accessibility, the wrong way around, as you would know. Mm-hmm. Unless something is specifically developed with accessibility in mind first, things are put onto the market to meet what is seen to be a market demand in a particular area. It's only at a point where they are making money, they are getting traction, and enough people kick up a stink that then developers will start to think about accessibility.
So, Pete, what's the experience like attending an event, a full conference on Remo? Because I was really fascinated when I was looking at it, when we were, you know, exploring this whole thing of sitting at a table where you can kind of be chatting to people before you go into the main hall. I guess it's almost like eating your chocolate muffins and stuff while you're sitting there.
Yeah.
And then you kind of say, oh, listen, I'll be back in a minute. I've just seen Pete. He's over at the other table. I want to go over and say hello to him. How does that really be? And yet you're sitting in your wherever you are at home. What's that experience like?
Do you know, it's really it was really energizing, and I think it's partly because when you're on Zoom and Teams and some of the other platforms, you just don't get that ability to interact. They're usually too large. So that I just found the reason I chose Remo in part was because of that energy I got. I was energized by those interactions I was having. And EdTech is something I'm aware of, but not something I'm particularly knowledgeable of, you know, massively. So the conversations I were having were on topics I wasn't that familiar with people I wasn't that familiar with from different continents, different time zones. So that was really interesting. But in terms of choosing Remo, I mean, Graham isn't a developer of it. Graham's, you know, one of the Remo guys in the country. I'd say from my experience, he's the best one. as in he's the only one I've used, but he's the best one in terms of engaging and, you know, can do, etc. So with running a conference on inclusion, so with the International Network of Inclusive Practice, we couldn't in good conscience not do some of this user testing and just make sure that we were comfortable that delegates with screen reading technology could interact, or if they couldn't, what could we do to mitigate that? Because that's what we have to do with Zoom and Teams. I mean, mm-hmm. Zoom has recently, but very recently, for such a widely used product, has introduced captions. Mm-hmm. But when I ran a session with another organization recently, we put in AI Otter subtitling kind of software to make sure that was an inclusive experience for one of the delegates. So it's kind of, I was exploring Remo to see what we needed to mitigate the barriers rather than just what its inclusive functionality was.
And as a screen reader user, actually, just having a bit of a look around it, it had a lot of potential. Yes, there was some unlabeled buttons, but there was a lot of stuff that was very easily found. There was quite a good use of headings and, you know, landmarks and stuff like that. So I think it definitely has hope. One of the things that and we were chatting a little bit before we started this podcast, we were talking about some of the, I suppose, challenges of that we've all found ourselves in over the last 9 or so months when you're on video calls in particular. And I, as a totally blind person, have very, very rarely put on my camera unless there's a very good reason to do so, unless somebody really wants me to. And it's not so much because I don't want to be on camera. I'm not that, I don't really care, but I have a huge issue with not understanding or not knowing what the camera sees around me. And when I was talking to you guys about that, you were sort of saying this is a bigger issue, I think, just not so much to do with people with sight loss.
Totally. One of the other things I do is help people with LinkedIn. And I coach people on LinkedIn, and you'll find that people struggle with being in front of a camera, full stop. It's an issue that just pervades really through society, and an awful lot of people don't like being seen on digital platform because they're looking back at themselves all the time. So it's like looking in the mirror, and you really have to get over that issue if you want to move forward and you want people to see more of you. And by seeing more of you, I don't just mean physically seeing more of you, but you can, when people are seeing not just a flat picture or a black space in front of you, but they're actually seeing your gestures, your nonverbal communication, what's happening on your face, etc. They're reading your emotions as well. And that has a massive impact in terms of the way people warm to you, especially in things like social media. So it's, if people want to get ahead in things like social media, for example, you need to learn to be able to do things like network with the camera on or do video content, albeit, you know, pointing your camera at yourself and taking a 2-minute video about what your day's been like. Mm. So it's an important process that people need to go through.
Yeah. I mean, I work mainly in, I work across corporate arts and culture heritage, but predominantly with education and predominantly with universities. And I know that initially during the March lockdown, from then on, there was a big kind of angst about cameras must be on and, you know, that camera being on equals engagement. And, you know, I also work over in Hong Kong and had been there in the political uprising and some of the schools trying to go online, and China had literally, the whole school system at the Ministry of Education had combined with the Ministry of Telecommunication, and everyone was online potentially. But the cameras being switched off just became the norm for a lot of undergraduate students because they were, you know, in either cramped conditions or they just didn't want to they didn't want to be looking and distracted. They wanted to listen, or there's a whole host of reasons. I think professionally, I like the cameras being on, particularly if I'm delivering, because it's really hard to engage with an audience of black tiles,
sure,
or whatever, you know, the thing is from, you know, that's the, I get energy and I also get a sense check on how I'm doing. But these platforms are terrible for that because it usually focuses on the three people who are yawning, you know, and you get disengaged, kind of mentally thinking, well, they're not listening to us. And clearly that's not true. I mean, everyone's engaged when I'm presenting, clearly. But it's it is a thing, Stuart. And I think we were talking about years ago, many universities started to interview using Skype or you know, those kind of platforms. And there was a whole sense of camera on, background's important, engagement's huge. And I think what our conversation touched on earlier was people have become a lot more relaxed about that. And I do think there's a generational thing. I think younger people are less keen to have, you know, the camera on. They're much, they seem to be, you know, kind of feel judgment more keenly. And that's borne out in the research. But slightly older generations seem to be less concerned about that.
And then you hear some of the funny stories like that happened, certainly in the early part of the lockdown. There was a politician here in Ireland, in the west of Ireland, who went out for a run and then had to come back, you know, coming back, jumped in the shower and then had to go on a call really quickly. So he put on his jacket, his shirt, tie and jacket, but didn't have anything on the bottom. But the camera did pick it up, and of course it went, you know, went all viral. So you get all those things as well, the funny stories. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys think? Because we're as we speak, I suppose in this podcast, the COVID-19 vaccines are, well, by all accounts, just around the corner, and some semblance of normality may be coming back next year. And conferences, as we knew them traditionally, may come back to some degree, but I think they're never going to be the same again. Where do you think something like REMO will sit in the future, Graham?
I think it will find an even bigger space when we start to move again. And the reason I think that is because we'll potentially get a little bit more revenue stream moving in to afford us to think about the uses of these things more effectively. I think we actually need to get society moving and us meeting again in the real world, as it were, in order to make some money. But I think as we do, I think what has been learned is from all of the businesses that I've dealt with and all of the people that I've talked to is that why have we been running around the planet like mad trying to put this event on here and this event on there, especially as a lot of the time we're just patting our own industry backs and we just turn up at an event and see all of the people that we're going to see next week at the next industry event. Mm. What these platforms enable us to do very effectively and very inexpensively is they allow us to be more creative with our marketing and also with our reach, because we can put on events where we can cross-pollinate between different groups of people, which we wouldn't do in real life. So an example of that was I put an event on for some virtual assistants, a network event with some of the conversation and some of the topics and some of the speakers to, you know, traditionally aimed at virtual assistants to do with, you know, sort of the way that they process admin and other things like that. But into that, I could bring in experts in other fields that I knew about, like ergonomics. Now, typically, nobody from ergonomics would ever come to an event about virtual assistants. No one from the virtual assistant world would ever go to a health and wellbeing ergonomics event in the real world. But in this virtual world, we can make that happen. And it's broadening people's reach.
I don't think suddenly everyone won't be going to places, and I don't think it suddenly everyone will stop this. I think it'll be a balance between the two. And I was at a meeting last night of a governing body for several schools locally, and what they tried to do pre-pandemic was streamline their meetings because people are under a lot of time pressure. They're mostly volunteers, and you know, the travel to there usually kind of mid-evening it's a pain to do it so frequently. But what they were missing was the frequency of meetings and that dialogue. So we could do some of the smaller pieces of work virtually, and then come together actually for those those kind of interactions with people. But we're social beings; we absolutely need contact with other people.
I think this
digital divide bit. If we were to try and do everything the way we're doing now, it would be successful. I think there's a happy medium and a happy balance.
I know.
You get me on to my other topic that I really love, which is a change going to happen in terms of spaces, I think. So that's all right to talk about that quickly. I mean, one of the areas that I inhabit as well is sort of ergonomics and office development, etc. And one of the things that we're constantly talking about at the moment is the fact that the office will, as we know it, will change and it will die. Because we have learned in this whole period that we do not need to go to a space that just replicates what we can do at home. We can sit at a computer in a comfortable home space, and we can do the plowing through databases, we can do the spreadsheets, we can do all of this kind of work, and we can, as Pete just said, we can have those micro meetings as well. When we go into a space that is a shared space, we want something different out of that space going forward. And I think what we will see, and actually I've got a friend of mine who works for a university just a few doors down from where I live, and through this whole pandemic, his whole team have worked from home. Yeah. And they are now talking about redeveloping their space into a more team-based space. So it's not going to be rows of desks anymore. It's not going to be come in, sit down, head down, work at your space. When you go into that space, it will be a different shared experience space where people can get more out of being with other people.
Yeah, well, some of my work is around neurodiversity and, taking it on from physical access audits to neurodiversity and digital inclusion. And from the neurodiversity perspective, I think a lot of large organizations are already moving a little bit away from, the pods and the rows of desks to creating space that functions in different ways for different people, including in a quiet space or studious buzz or loud interactions. So I think that that's an evolution, but I think we'll see more hubs moving from cities to the smaller towns and closer to people, reducing the commuting times and enabling that to take place. But I think the wider point needs to be at the theme of this podcast is about inclusive approaches to that. So rather than a whole scale, let's get smaller office space, it's cheaper and we can, less people will need to come in. Well, let's think about that, because we need an ergonomic solution for home. We need people to have assistive technology that works. We need to work in an inclusive and accessible way so that we get the best out of all our people, and so that everyone can thrive, not just people with, who are lucky enough to have larger spaces to live in, or who, have a shorter commute just by happenstance to the hub that's chosen. So there needs to be more thought around that.
I definitely think from my perspective, and just having talked to a lot of people over the last 7, 8, 9 months, is that I'm certainly looking forward to seeing more people again, to being able to do a bit of travel, go out to conferences and go to meetings and go back over to the UK, whatever. But I'm also looking forward to a more flexible lifestyle where I will work from home 2 days a week and being able to sort of manage that, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think, some of the wellbeing projects I was doing pre-pandemic, the bugbears were meetings that were inefficient, reply all emails, time pressures, trying to do more with less. And it's not the panacea for all, but a more flexible approach where everyone realizes that, presenteeism is a thing and being in the office doesn't equal good work. So I think, we've probably made a few quicker steps than we would have done towards a better workplace in that way.
Definitely. But I think we still got a long way to go on that. And it's quite interesting. Oh, yeah. That one of the next events that I'm running in Remo is an event which is looking at flexible working. And we've got a lady called Nicola Pease coming in to talk about that. And she's started up this organization because she couldn't get a position in HR that she needed because she wanted to have a young family at the same time. She couldn't find an organisation to support her properly. So she's started this FlexWorks, and she now has a flex audit that she does with businesses in order to see whether they actually understand and are going along the right lines of properly supporting flexible working. And I think there's still quite a long journey to go in terms of companies doing that properly.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be lovely, very interesting if we could glimpse into a crystal ball and see where we'll be in 12 months from now and how all this is going to be. Guys, it's been really great to chat to you both about Remo and I suppose about some of those broader things that we've touched on as well. Just if there are people who are listening who might sort of say, well, I want to check this thing out, how can people find out more about Remo, Graham?
They can go to my website, which is www.abetterwayoflife.co.uk, and it will tell you everything you need to know.
And a better way of life it is indeed, the future of more flexible working. Pete Quinn and Graham Coates, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to chat to you both. Stay safe and stay well, and hope to catch up with you again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Stuart.
Thanks a lot, Stuart. Great chatting with you.
It's always nice to catch up with users of technology, people who we know are passionate about the things that they can get into their hands that are life-changing for them. One such person is Martin Lawler. He's a friend of Sight and Sound Technology and has been for a very long time. And Martin is in Clontarf in Dublin, not too far from our studios here where this podcast is being produced. Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Stuart, thank you very much for having me on.
Great to have you. How are you keeping, first of all?
Yeah, I'm keeping fine. You know, getting out for my walks twice a day and, you know, listening to music on the Echo and on the Google Home Mini and using my iPhone as well.
It's been a very strange time for lots of people with COVID. So good to know that you're okay, that you're doing well. We wanted to talk to you. You and I always have lots of conversations about technology. You have a lot of technology and you're always trying out new products. I want to maybe talk a little bit about that. But before we do that, could I go back and just ask you a little bit about, like, what was the first bit of technology you ever came across? And when did you realize maybe, gosh, I'm really interested in this stuff?
Well, the first bit of technology that I had was the old Nokia Symbian phones. Well, I remember when I got my first one, I think it was called the 3650. And I just thought it was amazing that it had speech and that I could read my text messages and I could send text and receive calls.
That was the one with the keypad that was in a half circle.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
yeah. It was amazing. And I suppose there were two things. I remember reading a lot about that at the time. So that the way it was designed was amazing, because this half circle keypad, and then the fact that for many of us, and you're right, because I was the same, it was probably the first accessible phone that we had. Yeah. What was it? You know, what was it like for you to be able to read your text messages as opposed to having to rely on someone else to read them?
I just thought it was fun. I just thought it was fantastic. Like, it was amazing that you'd have this piece of software and someone developed it, that it could go onto the phones. Like, it changed. It was opened up new horizons for me, you know.
And of course, back then, the phone was just a phone and reading your text messages. You know, we weren't using the internet. We weren't probably even using email on the 3650. I think it might have had email, but I don't know if anyone did it. But nowadays, it's funny, Martin, isn't it? Because if someone gave you a 3650, you'd kind of say, is that all it can do? You know, we expect so much more, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And that's how I progressed on to using computers like my laptop with Jaws screen reader and able to surf the net on that. And then I progressed to another phone, the Windchill Classic, which I use now as well. But that's a basic phone, and it has apps pre-installed on it. But then I moved on to the iPhone, which has changed my world again, like, because you can do so much with it.
Talk to us about the Blind Shell Classic for a second, because this is a button phone that that kind of has a lot of the features that you might find in a smartphone. Is that right?
It does, yeah. Or you can't put apps on it, but it comes with apps installed. Like it has YouTube on it. It has internet radio. It has a book reader. You can play music on it and all that sort of stuff. And you can talk to it as well. You can control it all with your voice.
Okay. So you were using this, and I know from talking to you, because Martin and I have known each other for a long time, I know from talking to you that you spent a lot of time thinking about the iPhone and whether or not it was the right phone for you, because it's probably important to say it's not the right phone for everybody.
You
looked at this for a while. When you did make the move to the iPhone, because it's a learning curve, it has been a learning curve for us all, I certainly found it challenging at the start. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I found it challenging as well, very challenging also. But I have the iPhone SE 2 now, and I'm using it with a little Rivo keyboard. And also I'm using Siri for a lot of dictation and stuff, and I find it great.
One big advantage I find, I'm kind of a little bit envious of people who tell me that they have the iPhone SE 2, which has the home button, of course, is that I think when you're nowadays, so many of us are using our mobile phones to pay for things. If you're in a shop or something, you're not carrying cash with COVID, and it's just a lot safer. But when you use the newer phones with Face ID and you're wearing a mask, it's a lot more complicated. Whereas you have this home button that you just touch and it does it straight away.
Yeah. I prefer the iPhone with the home button. And I just think it's opened a lot of doors for me. Like I can use Scene AI, can read my email, read my text messages. Like it does everything. Use the Lazarillo GPS app, Blind Square, all that. And then I use the Rivo for typing my messages when I'm out and about.
So is GPS, because I think GPS is a really important thing for blind people, but does GPS work well for you using things like Lazarillo?
Yeah, it does. It works great.
Okay, fantastic.
Works brilliant.
Okay, let's talk then about your, because you've looked a lot as well at smart speakers and MP3 players, and because there's a load of stuff out there, isn't there? And sometimes it's hard for people to choose, you know, what's good over the other. You've looked at Google Home. Have you looked at the Amazon stuff as well?
Yeah, I have the Amazon Echo and I have the Google Home Mini, and I use them for Spotify, for timers, alarms, news, you know, just basically get nearly everything. And they're amazing because once you have them set up, you can just talk to them.
I'm very interested to ask you, because I don't have the Google Home. I just have the Amazon Echo. What do you think, or where do you think one does better over the other?
Well, I think the Google is more responsive because I have it here beside me, short, so I can ask it some questions if you'd like to hear it.
Let's go for it. Why not?
Okay, Google. What time is it?
It's 2:07 p.m.
Okay, Google. Give me the weather in Dublin today, in Clontarf.
In Clontarf today, it'll be rainy, with a forecast high of 14 and a low of 7. Right now, it's 13 degrees and cloudy.
Okay, Google. Play relaxing music on Spotify.
Okay, here's a Spotify playlist called Ambient Relaxation.
Oh, wow. So there it is. You're fully controlling this thing with your voice.
A bit of music there now. A
bit of music, okay. Oh, there we go.
Okay, Google, stop. So there you see, sure, it's very, very simple to use, you know.
It's fascinating stuff. What about things like, because obviously since lockdown, a lot of what we all would have done face-to-face has been difficult, and we've had to learn to stay in touch with each other in maybe different ways. And things like Zoom, and maybe, I don't know, Teams and WhatsApps and all these things have been very popular. How have you been getting on with that stuff?
Yeah, I use WhatsApp a lot, and I use Zoom now, like with yourself, and Teams I'm just starting to get the grips with. I find Zoom might be slightly easier. I don't know about you.
I think you're probably right. I think certainly from the end user's perspective and someone who just needs to connect to a meeting every so often, Zoom is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, like, you're always kind of looking, I know, because we have conversations every so often, you're always looking at what might be coming in terms of technology. Are you seeing anything that you're kind of interested in?
Not at the moment. I'm just concentrating on the iPhone and my smart speakers, and then I'm using my Victor Trek for my Audible books, and like that, I don't use the phone for the Audible books, just for the simple reason, I just like to keep the phone for as a phone and for GPS and other things, you know.
And are you using, out of interest, are you using the GPS functions of the Trek at all?
And I haven't used it now in a while because the HumanWare are updating the maps at the moment, so they're still in process doing
okay.
that.
Okay, very good. What would you say to people who might be listening to this, who might have, you know, they have some technology, maybe they're obviously tuned into this podcast in some way, but kind of thinking there's probably more I could do. What would, how should people get started, and what should they be thinking about?
Well, if they want to go for the for a basic phone, like just for calls and texts, I reckon the Blindtel Classic is a really nice little phone to get someone started. And then if they move on to the iPhone, I definitely recommend the Rivo keyboard, because that has helped me hugely with the iPhone.
You've got the second version of that Rivo keyboard, actually, and I haven't, because I used the first version, and they're tiny little things. It's an amazing concept that they're putting all this technology into one tiny little matchbox-sized keyboard. I found it a bit challenging, Martin. How have you got on with it?
I've got on with it great. Now, it took me a couple of weeks to learn it, but I find it really good for texting and for using the driver. Like, I can use it as a speaker, so I can answer my phone with it and use the driver to talk as well, and I can hang up calls with it as well. And then I use a little Bluetooth earpiece to answer calls as well and to hang up calls with the iPhone.
Would you find all this stuff drains your battery quicker? Because it sounds to me you've got a few things connected there to your phone when you're out and about, plus you're using GPS.
I can do sometimes, but it does a while. But I get a good few. I have a little power bank charger too that I bring with me.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
I charge up like that as well. So
self-sufficient.
Well equipped, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, it's true. I think when you're blind, I suppose if you're anybody who really relies on technology, but I think as blind people, we rely on it more, and even more so when you're out and about, you have to have, you have to make sure that you have the resources with you to keep power in the devices that you're going to depend on.
Yeah, definitely. And what I like about the iPhone, Stuart, as you know yourself, it's consistent.
Absolutely. And there's no doubt. I mean, I'm sure you saw it the first time you used it. Here's this built-in screen reader that Apple have put in. No cost to anyone.
No, it's very good. And I think it's only going to get better. Like,
Martin, it's been really nice to talk to you. It's been lovely to hear how kind of interested you are and how you've tried so much technology, and you seem to have settled on the iPhone, but you're still exploring all these other things around it, Google Home and Amazon Echo and everything else. Best of luck for the future. I think it's not going to be the last time we talk at all on this podcast.
Well, thanks very much, George.
But for the moment, stay safe and stay well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Stuart, thanks very much for having me on.
Many thanks to Martin Lawler there. I always enjoy catching up with Martin because he's always exploring new things about technology, which I think is really interesting. And he's trying out these products and he comes to me and says, Stuart, I've used this, and I'm there, I know nothing about this. Tell me about it, Martin. And he does. So it's brilliant. And of course, earlier on, many thanks to Pete and Graham. Remo is going to be big, guys. I know this is going to be something that I think we're going to see a lot more of, and from an accessibility perspective, I think it's going to be the place where we want to be in 12 months' time. Now, that's just about it. We're back soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight & Sound, stay safe and stay well, and thank you for listening.